your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a particularly great day for President Donald John Trump, not because of impeachment, but because today, while all the impeachment drama and pageantry is going on over in the U.S. Senate, John Roberts came over. He took an oath. He swore in the senators, each one taking an oath, inscribing their names in a book saying they pledge to do impartial justice. We can count on them, all of them, all the 100 U.S. senators to do that, right? Well, they did do justice earlier today. Before they got taken up with the time on impeachment, they actually delivered to President Trump what is, I think, arguably and probably his greatest achievement so far as President of the United States, which is the final approval of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. It is an improvement. Everyone concedes that. Even Bernie Sanders concedes that. He voted against it. The vote was 89-10. It now goes to the president's desk for his signature. And it's a proud moment. The Dow Jones Industrial Average loves this, which is an indication that it's good for the economy of the country. The Dow up almost 200 points, beyond 200 points right at the moment. It's in that vicinity. We have blown past that 29,000 mark on the Dow. Now, for anybody who has any investments at all, or is hoping someday to have investments, this up, up, and away stock market is very good news. But that coexists with all of the drama in the U.S. Senate and what appears to be evidence of a continued division in the country. How is that going to sort out? Well, it can't even sort out really with the division between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And I do know that yesterday I referred to her as Elizabeth Sanders. I am not implying that they somehow will meld into one personality. That's Bernie and Elizabeth. But Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, I mean, really? This should be a reality show because this is the end of a beautiful friendship, with grave consequences for the Democratic Party. Who says so? Michael Moore. We will get to that. We'll also get to an idea by a conservative law professor who's been a frequent guest on this show, John Yoo, who was a legal aide to President George W. Bush. But John Yoo has a brilliant idea for how President Trump could turn this impeachment trial into a real victory. He's going to be acquitted, which is going to be perceived as a victory and a great relief. But turn it from being just something where, okay, the president now can put that threat away, into being a conspicuous victory for him personally and for his administration. He'll tell us how coming right up. It's a dramatic idea, and actually I wish that White House aides would seriously consider it. We will get to that. We will also get to a veteran of the first women's march. I mean, more and more Democrats are looking ahead and thinking they may have to deal with their ultimate nightmare, which is a second term for Donald Trump. So what about intensifying the resistance, right? The idea of lots and lots and lots of women getting together in little kitten hats, and marching up and down Pennsylvania Avenue. And, well, there's one former marcher who was part of the original Women's March and Resistance who, to use an old protest song, is saying, "I ain't marching anymore." I forget, was it Phil Oakes who sang that song? It was an old union's, "I ain't marching anymore." Well, she's not. She'll tell us why not coming up. And then we'll also be talking about how Iran, which is such a nightmare, could actually turn into a real change, not just for Iran, but for Trumpian foreign policy, however long that continues, whether that Trumpian foreign policy gives way to a new president or continues into a second term. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. The ongoing drama, and it really is pageantry, in Capitol Hill has now intensified because there really is additional material that is pouring out from a very unlikely and somewhat unsavory source. Lev Parnas is the described always as the business associate, but I'm not even sure what kind of business they were in, of Rudy Giuliani, who is the president's personal attorney, who was at the very center of the controversy in Ukraine. And let me just select with you, he's now basically talking nonstop. He gave an exclusive interview, quote exclusive, to Rachel Maddow on MSNBC, and then went over to CNN to give a big interview with Anderson Cooper. And that hasn't been broadcast yet in its entirety. But what Lev Parnas is saying is kind of important, and it's kind of shocking. And what's complicated about this is he hasn't yet made a plea deal. In other words, normally, for somebody who seems now so determined to make both the president and Rudy Giuliani look very, very bad, it's hard to understand why he's doing that without getting some kind of deal from the prosecutors, given the fact that he's already under indictment. This is the way the story's covered in the Wall Street Journal. And the Wall Street Journal has another big editorial today. It's an excellent editorial about why impeachment is a terrible idea. They are standing by Trump. They are supporting President Trump enthusiastically for a second term. So I think we should take some of the reporting by Rebecca Ballhaus at the Wall Street Journal somewhat seriously. The headline is Giuliani Associate Tells of Scheme. And she writes, Lev Parnas, an associate of President Trump's personal lawyer, said he warned a top aide to the newly elected Ukrainian president that the U.S. would halt aid to the country if Ukraine did not announce investigations that could benefit Mr. Trump politically. This was allegedly in May, which was 2 months before that famous and fatal phone call, that famous and costly phone call with President Zelensky of Ukraine. Lev Parnas said the following. Rudy told me after the meeting, and this is after Rudy had met with the president. Rudy told me after the meeting the president at the White House, he called me. The message was, it wasn't just military aid. It was all aid that the U.S. would cut off if Ukraine did not announce investigations, Mr. Parnas said. Now, if this is true, is it relevant? Well, yeah. I mean, in other words, if the president had directly authorized that all aid to Ukraine would be cut off, and that was his term, cut off, then if there weren't these investigations of Burisma and Hunter Biden, it's fairly relevant. And there's more. Mr. Parnas broadly implicated Mr. Trump in efforts by himself and Mr. Giuliani to press Ukrainian officials to announce these investigations. President Trump knew exactly what was going on, Parnas said on MSNBC. He was aware of all of my movements. I wouldn't do anything without the consent of Rudy Giuliani and the president. Asked why, Mr. Trump said he didn't know Parnas last fall. Parnas replied, he lied. Relevant? That part is not relevant to the charges of impeachment, but it doesn't look good for the president. The documents show Mr. Parnas was in close contact with several high-level members of the president's orbit, in particular Mr. Tarnas traded dozens of texts in the spring, and he's produced the texts, with Tommy Hicks Jr., who was chairman of the pro-Trump super PAC, America First Action, until he was named co-chairman of the Republican National Committee in early 2019. The documents show that the two exchanged links to articles and tweets suggesting Ukraine interfered in the 2016 election and also assessing Joe Biden. Mr. Hicks is a close friend also of Donald Trump Jr., the president's son. He didn't respond to a request for comment from the Wall Street Journal. Look, all of this combined with evidence that there was some kind of potentially illegal surveillance of our ambassador to the Ukraine while she was still ambassador, Marie Yovanovitch. This is all extraordinarily complicated, and it doesn't look good. Is it particularly relevant? Well, more relevant to the basic charge of a quid pro quo, which, of course, was one of the charges in which the Democrats based their impeachment. But the question here, and I think this is one that conservatives really need to confront, is there any evidence regarding this entire matter that could come out that could persuade you that there was actually an impeachable offense that had been committed? And an impeachable offense that would go along with abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Is there any evidence that could come out? What if there were evidence that there was actually some kind of tape-recorded conversation? And for a guy with the kind of dubious background Lev Parnas has, who says he met on many occasions with the president, would it be unthinkable that he would have taped some of those interactions? It's not unthinkable. If a tape came out saying that the president wanted to withhold the aid to Ukraine until an investigation came forward involving Biden and involving Burisma, because that was specifically what President Trump requested in the conversation with President Zelensky, would that mean that impeachment then has to be taken more seriously? 1-800-955-1776, our phone number. It's an open question, it seems to me. And it's one of the questions that will be debated when the Senate gets around to debating impeachment. Look, I think it would be healthier for the country and better for the country if we all proceeded to the presidential campaign, which is already in full swing. And one of the few good things about the current impeachment process is that it will be taking Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar off the campaign trail, and they're going to have to be in Washington. They're among those who had to swear today their determination to act impartially on this particular issue. But it seems to me that ultimately, if people are voting on whether or not to remove the president, they are much more likely to vote on whether they generally believe the president represents a danger to the republic. And there are probably very, very few Republicans, probably none, who will vote that the extraordinary step of removing a president of the United States, which has never, ever happened before, there are very few Republicans who will believe that this entire Ukraine matter, even if the kind of recorded phone call, the only reason that some of these charges involving Lev Parnas, involving potentially what John Bolton might say when he testifies, and I think he will testify, when that comes out, the only reason that could have some kind of deeper significance is if it indicates that the president has outright lied, and it's provable in this matter. not a question of opinion. I mean, I think the president is wrong when he says it was a perfect phone call. It was perfect. It was the most perfect phone call anybody ever had. That kind of stuff isn't true, but it's not a lie. It's a matter of opinion. And the one thing that Trump has going for him that Clinton did not, and this was a very big point that was made yesterday by Matthew Spaulding of Hillsdale College and the Kirby Center. The one thing that Trump has going for him is, unlike Bill Clinton, he has never given testimony under oath. And there's certainly nothing in those questions that he submitted to Robert Mueller. Remember, there were written questions and answers that he submitted back as part of the Mueller investigation. There's nothing in those questions that is in any way touches upon any of these matters for impeachment. There's also a very, very real question. I think Andy McCarthy has a terrific piece today in National Review. We're looking forward to having him on, where he says what really should happen right now but won't, because this process is already, it's like getting on an up escalator. You can try to run down the escalator again and reconsider, but you're not going to make it. You're not going to run faster without potentially tripping and hurting yourself. The escalator's already headed up to the next story. And the next story is the impeachment trial. There will be an impeachment trial. And Kevin McCarthy is angry about the whole thing, and I think appropriately so. The leader of the Republicans in the House took to the House floor, and he made this point about what happened yesterday. Listen.
There's no greater contrast than what we are doing right here today than what is happening at Pennsylvania Avenue. The president sitting down with another country of a leader and signing a trade agreement, something people said we could never get done, to make this country stronger, to make America the next century ours. But what are we doing here? We are doing what this majority has worked their entire time for, before they are even sworn in. They campaigned for the position of chairman, for this moment, for this time, for the millions of dollars that are spent, so they could say the president is impeached. That's a lofty history. Those are lofty goals that you now have authored more subpoenas than you created laws. But thank God we got a president in the White House that does not sit back. He got the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, our top two traders. He's sitting with a trade agreement with China today. But think about how much stronger his hand would have been had that agreement taken place earlier when he got it. No, it was held. Why? Because we were impeaching. That's an amazing agenda, but you promised people you would do it. This is not a moment this body should be proud of. If, as Speaker Pelosi likes to say, impeachment is a national civics lesson, let's use this blunder as a teachable moment.
Let's use this blunder as a teachable moment, indeed. And that is the hope of Kevin McCarthy. The idea of using this impeachment as a teachable moment. So what are the lessons to be learned? One of the lessons that John Yoo takes away from the current state of impeachment is the entire thing could be settled in a way that would be enormously beneficial to Republicans and the president if the president took an extraordinary, completely unprecedented, earth-shaking, revolutionary step, and he agreed to come testify personally before the Senate. There is almost nothing that the president could lose by doing that, it seems to me, and a great deal he could gain. We'll speak to Professor Yoo about the legal aspects of impeachment and much, much more. And more coming up also about the, quote, protest movement and a leading leftist saying the Democrats are doomed. A leftist saying it. We'll get to that and more coming up on the MedVet Show. On the Michael Medved Show, I know there are many partisan Democrats who are extraordinarily enthusiastic about the entire impeachment process. I don't know why. I mean, the pageantry of it and the stateliness and the slow parade carrying the articles of impeachment. And Chief Justice Roberts today in his robe without the stripes on it, the chevrons that were on the robe of Justice Rehnquist, Chief Justice Rehnquist, when he officiated at the last impeachment trial 21 years ago, to make this the kind of spectacle that would attract the kind of mass audience that President Trump loves, because going back to his days as a reality star, what would be the ultimate reality show ratings grabber? How about the idea of Donald J. Trump testifying in person before the U.S. Senate? That's the idea of Professor John Yu. John is the Emanuel Heller Professor of Law and the director of the Korea Law Center, the California Constitution Center, and the Bolt Holes Law School's program in public law and policy, a senior law professor, former aide to President George W. Bush. John, I loved your column. If Trump testifies, he could settle the impeachment mess once and for all. First of all, how would it work if the president were willing to testify?
Well, Michael, thanks for having me back with you. And it's a somewhat provocative idea, I admit, because no president has ever showed up in person before. But when the impeachment trial starts, as you pointed out, Chief Justice Roberts is now sitting there. He's swearing in the senators as jurors. One of the things that gets sent to the president is a summons to appear, either himself or his legal counsel. So I could see, I would think this would be irresistible to Trump. He can show up in two roles. He could come as a witness. He could have his own defense lawyer say, we're going to produce President Trump as a witness, and he'll appear in the well of the Senate, and he'll answer your questions. He has repeatedly said, this was a perfect call. I'm innocent. He's talked about it at great length at his rallies. He's debated on TV shows about it. Why not show up in the Senate? But suppose his lawyers say, oh, you're going to give up presidential privilege. You don't want to be subject to questions. You don't want people to be arguing back and forth in your face. Well, the other provocative idea I hope that I threw out was President Trump could be his own defense counsel. He could, under the Senate rules, show up at the end of the trial and deliver his own closing statement. How could he resist something like that as a reality star? As you said, I think it would be the biggest TV ratings in the history of mankind, even beyond the dreams of NFL executives.
And since he knows that the conclusion of this entire process is he wins, I mean, the fix is in, and I don't mean that in the negative way. It's just that there are 53 Republicans in the U.S. Senate. It would take some 20 of those Republicans to desert the president for the Democrats to get the two-thirds vote they need to remove him. So it's one of those things where he participates in a reality show where he's the guaranteed winner going in. That's a pretty sweet deal.
Yes. And if he does it at the end of the trial, under the Senate rules, the senators are jurors. And in a jury trial, the jurors don't ask questions. They would have to sit there and just listen as he gave a speech that could go on as long as he wanted. You know, under the rules that they're talking about right now, Senator McConnell is thinking of giving each side 24 hours of time to make their case. I expect President Trump will be reserving 23 of those 24 hours for his own side if he gets to give a stem winder at the end.
Well, it's one of those things. He has actually spoken at some of his recent rallies. He's spoken 2 full hours and more. So it could be. What are the dangers of the president taking a step like this and actually coming and speaking in person at the impeachment trial?
So there's two. One is this idea that you don't, if you're President Trump's lawyers, and that's a hard job, let me say, if you're President Trump's lawyers, you're going to be saying, you don't want to show up. What if senators ask you questions? You're going to be under oath. Presidents have really never appeared in the Senate Actually, there's a really interesting one. George Washington was the first and last president to show up in the Senate. He actually thought, I have to get the Senate's advice and consent about something. I'll actually walk over there and take their advice and consent. And he was so angry at the end of that first session. He had a horrible temper, and he stormed out of there. And he said on the way out, he was heard to say, I'll be damned if I ever step foot in there again. And no president ever since has shown up in person on the well of the Senate. So that's one tradition Trump's lawyers may not want him to break. And then the second one is the only time, you know, you don't want to set a precedent that one branch can drag, you know, compel another branch to appear before it, that they should respect each other's independence. So that's the other constitutional principle. But, you know, President Trump, you know, under the rules, he could do it if he wanted. It's his choice to make. He can say, look, I choose to show up. I want to prove that I'm innocent. At least in all this, American people can see him, as will the Senate, look him in the eye under oath and see if he's telling the truth.
Okay. People right now are looking at some of this new evidence that is coming forth on impeachment or prospective new evidence from John Bolton, the new charges, and they're fairly lurid and alarming from Lev Parnas, who is one of Rudy Giuliani's business associates. Can you imagine any revelations that would emerge in this process that would actually change the game, that would be the kind of material that would persuade the 20 Republican senators who need to be persuaded and make this an actual trial with an uncertain outcome?
It's a good question, Michael. I don't see that, and here's why. One is I think you're going to see a lot of Republican senators, those 20 senators, are going to think, why should we turn the Senate trial into an ongoing investigation into the president? Wasn't that the House's job? And because the House, I think we talked about this before, the House rushed the process. They didn't take their time. It was very different than the Nixon investigation or the Clinton investigation. They didn't hear from all the key witnesses, like the people you just mentioned. The senators will sit there and go, say, why should we sort of make up for the House's defects by turning the trial not a review of the case the House has sent over, which is what the Senate has done in the past, but turn it into just ongoing investigations? There could be no end to it. Right? Why would it have to be limited to Ukraine even? Why don't we add even more cases or claims of Trump abusing his power? So I think that's one. The second, and I think this is probably where it's going to go, is that you could say, I've looked at all the evidence. Let's assume everything the Democrats have said in their House impeachment articles is true. Suppose Trump did say, I want Ukraine, I want you guys to look into the Bidens, and sent in various ways a message that said, if you don't do it, we're holding up your foreign aid. I think a lot of Republican senators are going to say, even if that's true, it's not worth removing a president during an election year. Let the American people see the facts and they can decide in November.
Well, partially, and I wanted to get to this. John, do you have the opportunity to stay for a few minutes more?
Sure, of course. Because
I want to ask you about this new GAO report, which is not nothing. It's the General Accounting Office. This is not lawyers. This is accountants. But they are saying now that the administration, if not the president personally, broke the law in delaying aid that had been specifically appropriated on a bipartisan basis by the Congress. Now, all of a sudden, does this change things? If you have an agency of Trump's own administration, the executive branch, that says, wait, laws were broken here regarding aid to Ukraine. We'll continue the conversation with John Yu of the University of California Law School and much more coming up on The MedVet Show. Speaking right now with John Yu, one of the most interesting legal minds and best trained legal minds in the United States. He is a professor of law at University of California at Berkeley. And he is also a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and a visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution of Stanford. So he's got it all covered, and he has electrified a lot of insiders with a suggestion he wrote about in the L.A. Times. We can post his column to our website at michaelmedved.com. A John Hughes column, if Trump testifies, he could settle the impeachment mess once and for all. I wanted to get to this story today, which is I have not heard an effective response to it yet from the administration. President Trump is, I'm sure, going to have something to say about it. But the General Accounting Office, which looks at the spending of money, it's the accounting branch of the executive branch of the government. The GAO has come forth with a statement that says they believe laws were violated when the aid to Ukraine was held up by the Trump administration. Does this have any deeper significance when it comes to this impeachment fight?
I don't think so. First, this is actually far more complicated than the GAO, which is a branch of Congress, by the way. It's a congressional agency, is letting on. So look at it this way. Congress gives money to the executive branch and allocates certain amounts to different countries. What if the president knew for sure that if we transferred that taxpayer dollars to, say, some dictator, he was just going to put it in his own personal bank account and start spending it on airplanes and watches and fine suits in London and French wines? We've always thought that the president has some inherent right when he's carrying out the spending of Congress to make sure it's not wasted and abused, that it's not just being disappearing into a black hole. And so the fight really is, how broad does that inherent trust in the president to make sure the taxpayer dollars are spent right go? A president can't go so far. And President Nixon tried this. You can't go so far as to say, I don't want to spend the money at all. I just refuse. I think Congress made a bad decision. So the president can't refuse to spend money because he just disagrees with the policy, because that's up to Congress's power of the purse. But can he delay it until that country gets its house in order and make sure the money is properly spent the way we all want it to be spent? There, I think many the practice has been that presidents have been able to do that, so long as in the end they eventually do transfer the money. And here, you know, what the Trump administration is going to say is the money actually was transferred in the end. So what's the big, right? What's the big legal violation?
Okay, and the real question, and you make this point in your column. Right now, there seems to be very, very broad agreement about what actually happened. It's not like there's a basic argument about the facts of the case. What is in question is Trump's motive. And the aid was held up. The Trump administration and the president himself say the aid was held up because Trump in general doesn't like the idea of foreign aid. And he was justly worried about corruption in Ukraine. And, of course, the Democratic articles of impeachment say that the holdup of the aid was based on an attempt to pressure Ukraine to somehow interfere in our elections. What you're saying in your piece is that question of motive, which, of course, also comes up in this new GAO report, that question of motive could be clarified definitively only by Trump's testimony.
Exactly. You're exactly right, Michael. I think that really puts the finger on it for people. And I think that's people have been missing that in the public discussion over impeachment is a set of facts occurred. Everyone does seem to agree what happened. I mean, I think that was a good thing in the House impeachment proceedings. They just didn't fully pursue it. They stopped too soon. But there doesn't seem to be any alternative set of facts. It all really depends on why was the aid suspended. Was it because, right, as you say, to get at corruption, or was it really to squeeze the Ukrainians to provide political dirt to use against the likely 2020 nominee for the Democrats? And that's really Trump's state of mind, and the only person who can really answer that question is the president himself. That's why I was hoping he might actually want to show up. His interest might be ratings and being the center of the political universe. But the constitutional interest and the interest of American people might be able to see what he says and see the look in his eye. That's how a lot of people are acquitted or convicted in courtrooms all across the country thousands of times a day as we make decisions on people's motives and intentions. And that can determine whether all those people go to jail or they go free.
Well, what this also comes to is, of course, Trump would be the first president ever to do that. But he's a first president in another capacity. Is all of the other serious impeachment attempts, both the two presidents who were actually impeached, Bill Clinton and Andrew Johnson, and the president who was on the verge of impeachment, Richard Nixon, none of them were candidates in an upcoming election because for Clinton and Nixon, they were term limited. For Andrew Johnson, he had already lost any chance of winning a presidential nomination, and he wasn't a candidate for re-election, and the whole impeachment was right before the election of 1868. So Trump is really the only person who's ever faced impeachment who is simultaneously trying to win public confidence for another term. It seems to me that there's almost no way that Trump's testimony could hurt his case for a second term. What's the biggest pothole that he could step in or trip up in during the course of impeachment and his testimony?
Yeah, it's a good point. You could say he so obviously lies and everybody could tell and says things are so contradicted by the facts that the senators and the American people watch and they say, this guy's lying. And actually, maybe it is the story that he was doing it to get political dirt that turns out to be true. That could happen. On the other hand, he's been on TV and campaign rallies saying he's innocent and saying that's not the story and that it was for that his moves were to try to reduce corruption in Ukraine. And as you say, this is a bigger point that you make, Michael. An important really important constitutional point is when the founders set up the system to contain and correct presidential abuses of power, they believed that the main check was elections. They repeatedly would say, if a president does things we don't like, if a president's pursuing bad policies, even if he's a bad man, bad character, the answer is to vote him out of office. And when the founders wrote the Constitution, they didn't have a two-term limit, so they always thought this would be available. Then they said impeachment should be for really extreme cases where you can't wait till the election. And the abuse of power is obvious and clear. That's a hard case to make when we're already in the election year.
Exactly right. So I take it, Professor Yu, that you think in terms of just the legal aspects of this, the right vote for impeachment is to acquit.
Yes, I think there's two ways you could do that. You could say this may be a high crime and misdemeanor, but it's not worth removing a president because it's not serious and harmful to the country. Or you could say, we're so close to the election, let the American people have their say. I think that's actually what the founders would have preferred.
That's John Yu. He is the Emanuel Heller Professor of Law at the University of California Law School at Berkeley, Bolt Hall Law School, and former aide to President George W. Bush. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit next hour to a veteran of the first Women's March. She's not going to be back for any subsequent marches or protests, and the reasons are surprising but important. We will get to that. Also, President Trump just moments ago made some comments about impeachment. We will cover those right away, because they're directly relevant to the excitement in this greatest nation on God's green earth.